The House Workforce Development Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. Vice Chair Brandon, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I took a look at the minutes, and I would like to move those minutes, please. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Brandon moves approval of the minutes from March 29th. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes approved. This morning, we have House File 2233. It is the our budget bill. And so I'll move that House File 2233 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And we have the delete all amendments, which includes all of the bills that we discuss on Wednesday. And so I'll move for adoption of the 823 to get the bill in the shape that I like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The amendment is adopted. And so, folks, as I said earlier, this is the amendment of the bill that our committee has put together. And I know that we have some amendments here today. And so the first amendment we have is the A1 from Rep. Ryer. Would you like to move and explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to withdraw that amendment for today.
Okay. Representative Ryer is going to withdraw the A1 amendment. So next is the A2 amendment from Representative Senator Muir. Would you like to move your amendment and explain it, Representative Senator Muir?
Yes, thank you, Chair Zhang. I would like to move the A2 amendment. This amendment is related to the bill that I brought about supporting people with mental health concerns in addressing barriers to employment. In the original bill language that I brought, there was language about having a working group to look at the barriers to employment. This is a little bit of a change to that. This is just asking the commissioner to engage stakeholders to identify barriers that adults with mental illnesses face in obtaining and retaining employment. I know that Lead Baker, when we were having conversation on the original bill, mentioned, you know, making sure that employers, you know, can be part of that, and that language is listed here. And so I would ask for a yes vote on.
Discussions to the amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and amendments adopted. Next is the A3 amendment from Lee Baker. Lee Baker, would you like to move and explain?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And before I do that, Mr. Chair, are we still planning on hearing some bills that we didn't hear earlier from folks that, you know, landed in our committee that I just want to, not sure if this is the right place to ask it, but I just want to know, is that still the plan this morning, Mr. Chair?
Deed is here, and I'm assuming we're going to have time for Deed to present.
Okay.
So they'll be doing
that. We need to hear the bills that are in our bill that we never heard. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me get to A3 here, please. Let's see. There it is. Thank you. So, Mr. Chair and members, I wanted to readdress the one of the missing components that a bill that was heard here was from Representative Joe Schumacher, and it was is regarding the pilot project that we had heard about that is happening in Southwest Minnesota. I really felt, you know, really strong about that project. I thought it was $700,000 that I thought would go to a very needed thing in Southwest Minnesota. It's a one-time funds a pilot project. Again, the state of South Dakota is really throwing out some very aggressive ways of getting our members, our residents, to go to school out there. And it's something that, again, Mr. Marcourt was here with Southwest Initiative Foundation doing some good planning. They've been talking about this for a number of years. This pilot project would involve Deed, Southwest Initiative Foundation, the local workforce development boards, the Minnesota West campuses. There's seven of them in the lower area of Southwest Minnesota. Countless employers across 18 counties have worked hard on this kind of a project, and again, a lot of folks are in favor of it. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm hoping that we can take this to conference. I'm suggesting we take $700,000 out of the Workforce Development Fund, and so it still kind of ties everything up together here. But I hope that we can take it to conference and have further discussions about it so that it doesn't kind of get left behind. I think if we don't do these kinds of things in an area that is bleeding for more folks to kind of stay in our region, this is going to really hurt us. So for rural Minnesota, I hope members can support this kind of an amendment. Again, it works through a fund, just what workforce development is supposed to be doing. So I hope that you see this as a very reasonable and friendly amendment, Mr. Chair, and I'll take any questions.
Discussion. Vice Chair Brown.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question with this is, we heard the bill, and we're bringing this now to the committee, and it's coming out of the Workforce Development Fund, which is fine. My question, I guess, is, so we're going to spend $750,000 in this pilot program, and this is just for kids to go to, or for young adults to go to college. What about the trades? What about certificate programs? What about things like that, Lee Baker?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if I have anybody here that can speak to this or not. Yes, if I could have a testifier come up. Just a little bit more clarity, if that's all right, Representative Brand and Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm out.
Thank you very much. I want to make sure we get the testimony correct here today, so thank you.
Welcome, committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Eric Simonson, lobbyist with Flaherty and Hood, representing the Southwest Council of Mayors. And to your question, Representative Brand, the program is not designed specifically for two-year degree programs at these campuses. It's designed to cover any certificate program, any kind of program that the school offers, either on the credit side or the non-credit side. The criteria is meant to be defined by the Workforce Development Boards in respect to what are the high demand occupations on any given year.
What's your brand?
Yep. Thank you. So do we have a list of those in high demand programs that we need people in the workforce for that we aren't getting through other scholarship opportunities?
Mr. Erickson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brand, that's a very good question. This is the one that really brings in the expertise of the local and regional workforce development boards. The bill itself requires those boards to submit this information to SWIFT and Minnesota West on an annual basis, so that we're adjusting annually just in terms of what the demands are with each of the individual employers within the Southwest footprint.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it.
Chair Becker-Fenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, Representative Baker, there's mention of both the Lower Sioux Indian community and Upper Sioux community at the beginning in the definition of the Southwest Initiative Foundation, but then there's no further mention of them. And I'm wondering, have they weighed in? Do we have a letter from them? I'm just wondering if you can speak to the involvement or where the tribes in this area are at on this proposal.
Lee Baker.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, that's a really good question. I don't have those letters with me. Again, I may want to defer to my testifier if he could. I don't know if we've got any letters from them. I know there are folks in the Lower Sioux may certainly want to be a part of this, or have a letter of support. Mr. Simonson.
Mr. Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Becker-Fenn, another excellent question. On page one of the amendment, we're just simply defining what the footprint of the Initiative Foundation is. And that includes both the upper and lower Sioux community, as you referenced. So any of those counties in both of those communities would be included in this SWIFT footprint, if you will, and eligible to participate.
Chair Becker-Fenn.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. I know you listed them, but, have you had meetings with them? Are there letters, but we just don't have them? I mean, what is the actual involvement been? Because I don't think it's enough to just name a tribal nation without actually engaging.
Mr. Simonson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Becker-Fenn, that's good. We don't have a specific letter from any of the counties or either of those communities. But SWIFT and Scott Marquardt, I think, mentioned it when he was here a couple of weeks ago when we had the bill up in committee, that they're in constant conversations with all of these folks in the community, including the ones that you're referencing. But I don't have a specific letter in support, but certainly they would be included as part of the SWIFT footprint.
Chair Becker-Fenn.
Final follow-up, Chair Zhang. And I just think we have to be careful. I hear a lot of people who are in constant conversation with our tribal nations, and I just think we have to actually hold them up as the sovereign nations that they are, and make sure we're engaging in a really respectful way and careful about including folks who they got to be involved in the actual work. They can't just be listed in a program. So thank you.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, I'm not a tax guy, so I'll start with that. But I was looking at line 4.12 in subdivision 10, the local employer scholarships tax credit. Has there been any conversations with Chair Gomez and taxes about how that impacts? Or I guess my question to the chair is, what would this need to be discussed in taxes as well?
Lee Baker.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have not specifically had a conversation with Chair Gomez about this. I think, again, we bring a lot of ideas through this. Again, I'm hoping that setting up a program like this can be identified and maybe brought to conference committee so we can examine it further. Every year that goes by is another year that we fall further behind with our neighboring state. So I'm hoping that if we just at least take it to conference, if we can work on it as it continues to move along, if we can't find a good way to get the tax policy set up, if it's complicated, if it's not, we do these things kind of all the time. I think, at least I assume we do in some ways with our friends at Southwest. They have thought this through. This is something that they should be able to set up. And again, I would just ask the committee to work this thing through. Again, we are hopefully passing bills today that we didn't even hear, and we want to hear this one move along. At least I would suggest that would be our goal today. So I can certainly commit to that. If you allow it to move forward, I will personally make sure that I reach out to Chair Gomez and see if this is something we can do as part of our bigger package.
Lee Baker, do you want to take out that section?
Sure, Mr. Chair. If it's a divisible a part of this that would still work, I'd want to make sure that the testifier would be okay with that. And that is, if I understand it correctly, it would be 4.12 section. 4.12 to 4.17. I'm sorry.
4.1,
yeah, and just to delete subdivision 10 and renumber the subdivisions in order. Sure, Mr. Chair, I would like to move or make the motion that we remove subdivision 10 from the bill and renumbered as prescribed by the nonpartisan.
All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Vice Chair Barron, still have a question?
Yeah, I'm not well versed in statute, but Chapter 290, Mr. Chair, and maybe the nonpartisan staff can help me. Is Chapter 290 dealing with taxes in Department of Employment and Economic Development, or is that specifically a Department of Revenue statute?
Ms. Shaleen?
Chair and members, I'm not deeply familiar with the tax statutes, but I know it's not an economic development statute. I believe it is a tax statute.
Further discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and when we heard this bill, a couple weeks ago, I supported it then. I think, a fair amount of us, we're interested in it. And Pine Tech and Community College is a tech school in my area that has somewhat of a similar program. There's a local or somebody in the area that has a foundation that's, providing some of this. And then there's some businesses as well that, Chair Brand, your question of what are the needs of, some of these programs that are able to use for, whether it's a certificate program of somebody, maybe they went through machining, learning how to machine. Well, they've changed. And so now with the CNC programs and the updating software, you know, they can come in and, you know, somebody that's maybe had a change in their career can come in and get a certificate, a refresher course, if you will, and be certified on a, you know, on some of the newer machinery and be able to do this. And so it's a great opportunity that's happening. It's a lot of our local businesses and job providers, manufacturers that need these. Some of it's in the healthcare field, some of it's manufacturing. And they've been able to, you know, partner with the community on really what is needed. And it's been a great thing for East Central Minnesota and the jobs that are needed there. And I think, you know, I think we've got a very similar issue in Southwest Minnesota of a workforce that probably just need a few more skills. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to keep people in their communities because it's important to be able to do so. And I would just encourage its adoption and, you know, work on this through conference committee or whatever. But I think it's, you know, in other areas that have been somewhat similar, I think it's been a great program. So that's my thoughts.
Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a long story about my first visit to a small town in southern Minnesota when I was an intern with the Regional Development Commission as an urban planner. And the conversation, I won't tell that story, but the conversation with the mayor and the council was the concern about the town losing folks and what could we do to ensure that we could revitalize that town. So I think programs like this, I think, are important because I think they do and they can facilitate and do just that. So I thank you for bringing the amendment. And it was a sincere question about the tax piece. I was wondering, I didn't want things to get held up, but thank you for that.
Further discussion. Lead Bank, Vice Chair Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question about this. And so we just, you know, we just made a motion and passed the motion to delete subdivision 10. Now, if the bill doesn't quite work because of it, and we can find clarification that, in fact, 290 isn't revenue, it's more of something else, can we add it back in later on?
What's your ban? I'm told that any tax provision here would have to be in a tax bill.
Okay.
So if we were to pass this with that division, then our whole bill would have to go to the tax, and we won't meet that deadline.
Okay.
And Sue,
Lee Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And again, thank you, Representative Brand, for the question. I think what my attempt here today would be then to, if the committee recognizes this might be a problem, we don't have enough answers to really kind of dive into that chapter. But if we can continue to move it along, if we can work through this with Gomez, Representative Gomez, or somebody on the other body, maybe the Senate could see what they're doing as well, see if we can line this up. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but I would appreciate allowing the bill to continue to move forward with our bill at this time, and then we can work on it afterwards to see if we can actually still bring it around so that the benefits of this bill are still valid for this. So. This just gives us a little bit more time to work on it, Mr. Chair.
Simonson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification for the committee's sake, in the other body, the bill was heard in the Jobs Committee originally, and then they passed it on to the full Tax Committee where we had a full hearing as well. So that piece that you just amended out, which is fine, that's should be being carried in the Senate tax bill.
Any other discussion? Chair Becker
Fett. Thank you, Chair Zhang. I just want to make sure with research, did we just amend an amendment to an amendment by taking out that section, or are we okay since the 823 is not technically a DE?
We already adopted the 823. It's not an amendment.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're not running into any problems, so I just wanted to double check with...
To answer your question, yeah, I'll just start with here. We adopted the 823, so the bill is in front of us as amended. These are amendments to that bill that we already amended. So this does give us the opportunity to amend this amendment. We adopted the DE already for this reason, for reasons like this, because we can't go three tiers.
Further discussion.
I wanted to double check.
Yeah. Any more discussion? Okay, Lee Baker, if I can get a commitment from you to work on that, work over all these kinks.
Mr. Chair, you have that commitment, and thank you for allowing us to spend some time on this today and to try to get it right. Again, I'm glad to hear that and with your testimony that it is being identified in the Tax Committee and the other body. We will work on this as well, Mr. Chair, so I appreciate your consideration today, members.
All those in favor of adopting the A3, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next item on the agenda is the A4 amendment. Representative Centromura, would you like to move and explain your amendment?
Thank you, Chair Zhang. I would like to withdraw the A4.
The A4 is withdrawn. The next item is the A5 amendment from Representative Centromura. Would you like to explain and move your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Chair Zhang. I would like to move the A5 amendment. This amendment is related to the bill that Chair Knorr brought us earlier this year related to overpayments in the unemployment insurance system. And then we heard about the fee and fine structure that Minnesota has. It has a much higher fee than other states, and we heard about how that is really negatively impacting particularly low-income individuals who kind of get caught up in increasing fines for unemployment insurance overpayment, oftentimes because they're just not understanding or fully understanding the system. So there's already some language in the bill from Knorr's bill, but this piece is asking Deed to look at how we could reduce the fines from 40% to 15%, eliminating the 12% interest rate, and coming back to the legislature next year. I see this as a compromise between various parties who have been involved with this for a long time, and I would ask the committee to support this amendment.
Discussion to the A5. Lead Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Centromura. This is a good catch, and I'm glad you brought this to us. I sort of lost track of this one, and I recognize this is very important to try to better understand why we have such high fines, and we want to get some better reporting then from the commissioner. So this would be great. I do support that. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Further discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The amendment is adopted. Members, I want to let you know that the chair has purchased coffee and treats this morning from
Makwa
Coffee, a fine establishment here. And so please help yourself to some good coffee and treats as we vote on the bill here today.
Maybe it is.
We also have our colleagues from Deed who will be here to discuss portions of the governor's bill that's included in here. They also have a presentation to address questions that you have, Lead Baker. And so if our folks from Deed could come and do the presentation and share with us the wonderful proposal that they had that was given to us.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Becker Flynn.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. While they're setting up the roast of coffee that I brought today is a Ethiopia from the Yirgacheffe region, which if you're a coffee nerd, is one of the best regions to get coffee from. So please enjoy.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and members. My name is Evan Rowe. I'm Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Services and Operations at the Department for Employment and Economic Development.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and representatives. My name is Mark Majors, Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development, Department of Economic Development.
Proceed.
Okay. Just a little bit of preamble. So this is, we're just doing a quick walkthrough of the priorities in the governor's budget, many of which we are grateful to this body for having adopted in the omnibus bill. But really what informed the governor's budget, and I think much of, you know, of the work of this committee, is that we recognize that this is a time for transformational thinking. As our state is coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, as we are confronting many opportunities brought on by federal funding opportunities and the changes in our communities, we are really eager to work with the legislature to develop a budget that meets the moment and helps Minnesota capitalize on this opportunity. And to that point, you know, recently, I think you may have seen that the Governor's Council on Economic Expansion released a 10-year economic expansion plan with a series of critical principles to help Minnesota meet this moment. You know, first is committing to our people as the state's number one strength and key to a prosperous future. The second is to commit to our communities. Third is to commit to our businesses. Fourth, to commit to innovation. And fifth, to commit to infrastructure. I think you'll find that this bill, in conjunction with the rest of the governor's bill, and hopefully the ultimate bills that that are passed this session, will help us achieve that objective and achieve that vision. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Mark.
Go ahead, Commissioner Majors.
Thank you, Chair Zahn, and good morning again, members of the committee. Mark Majors, Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development. So the first one we're going to start with, well, let me start. You know, we're at a critical time for workforce development in our state, with over 200,000 job vacancies and an unemployment rate hovering around 3%. We need to start as a state looking at, you know, meeting the moment for now, but also looking at the future and what our future workforce needs are going to be. We think that these priorities that are outlined in the governor's bill are moving us in that direction. So the first one is the Drive for Five Fund, which is a fund that's looking at investing funds into five key sectors, I should say, technology, care professionals, education, manufacturing, and also trades. And how we came up with these five were based upon labor market information. I'm going to try to stay away from the acronym, sorry. Labor market information that really showed us that these five areas are where we see high growth and high wage. When I say high wage, I'm saying family sustainable wage jobs. And so this is where we're focusing. We like to focus these funds there. In addition, we like to focus funds there towards actually working with our trade associations to help us with the placement of the individuals who do go through these trainings. Our trade associations, a lot of times, have strong working relationships with employers and have an inside track to what those jobs may be, and also help guide us with the placement of that. And then lastly, we're looking at funding that's going to help us with actually putting folks out on the ground into our local workforce development areas to assist with the placement of individuals who are coming into our career force system. This is a key piece for a lot of employers to have a connection to a source of folks, a pipeline of folks, and so having bodies there to kind of do that work and work with employers is really key and critical for us. Next slide. Targeted populations. This is a very important one because, as I mentioned earlier, we're looking for populations that have been not touched our workforce system in the past. They've been overlooked, may have multiple challenges to get into the workforce, which may be societal pieces, but also maybe just they may need assistance with skilling or reskilling. The funds here would assist with doing that reskilling and also regular skilling for entry level and providing training. In addition, it would provide money not only for basic training, but also for entrepreneurial training. One of the things that we've seen throughout the course of this last 4 years, a lot of people are looking to become entrepreneurs. And so an investment in helping individuals to understand what it takes to run a business and how to continue to move a business forward is really key. In addition, we also know one of the things as we try to work with our employers, and I say this employer base in these efforts, is really to assist employers with DEI training. This investment would help small and medium-sized businesses or organizations with prepping themselves not only from the point of doing outreach and recruitment, but also retention in the course of actually bringing people in. That's a huge piece of this bill as well. And then lastly, it's capacity building. We know a lot of our organizations that are doing this work in the community need additional assistance, and that comes in the form of whether it's staffing, infrastructure pieces, or other items that they may need to get their systems up and moving. So that's those are three key pieces of this piece. Office of New Americans. I know you've all heard a lot about the Office of New Americans over the last couple of months. Obviously, this is a key office for to help work with our immigrant and refugee populations, particularly when we start looking at both workforce and economic development. This office will be a key liaison with other state enterprise agencies to bring them together to assess what the needs are and to ensure that we are looking at and meeting the moment for our immigrant and refugee population. Our youth workforce development. We have a premier youth workforce development program here in Minnesota. I think it's one of the best in the country, to be quite honest. Currently, we serve about 10,000 folks, and we want 19,000. We want to double down on that. And we have existing programs in Minnesota Youth Program, Youth Build Program, and the Youth at Work Program. This would put approximately 38,000 workforce training, about 38,000 youth over the next 2 years. And so this is critical funding as we start thinking about our future workforce, creating pathways for individuals and making sure employers have a future pipeline of workers moving forward. And then our return to work. Our return to work, we saw during the pandemic, we saw about 60,000 folks 55 years and older leave our workforce. We need to bring some of those folks back. There was a great deal of knowledge loss and experience that we lost in our workforce when folks decided to retire. So this investment would be on a state, this would be an investment in bringing those individuals back into the workforce so we have more knowledge, more experience coming back in those key positions that we need throughout the state. And I'll turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Rowe. Thank you.
Commissioner Rowe.
Thank you, Chair John. The first item I'll touch on is a new proposal from the administration called the Minnesota Reasonable Accommodation Program. We recommend a one-time appropriation of $4 million in the biennium for this. And what this really is meant to do is it's to help small and mid-sized Minnesota employers defray expenses that are tied to providing reasonable accommodations for employees with disabilities. In this moment where we're seeing historically low unemployment, and we know that there are opportunities to, and there's a desire for Minnesotans with disabilities to enter the workforce, but oftentimes the cost for doing so can be difficult for small and medium-sized businesses. So this program is about making it easy for them to do the right thing. It'll provide reimbursement for these types of expenses, and we really think that this is a really useful tool to help Minnesota employers create disability inclusive workplaces, help solve the workforce shortage in the state, and also to help bring in Minnesotans with disabilities into the workforce at a critical time. We also recommend the individual placement and support program. This is a program from DEED's Vocational Rehabilitation Services that provides specialized support to about 700 people with serious mental illness to help them find and sustain steady employment. The budget increase in this would basically help address a looming funding gap that would require us to reduce those services and actually provide some additional support. Again, at this moment of critical workforce shortages, we think that this is a very good tool. It's a very successful program where we work with a series of community providers who deliver these services. It can help people with serious mental illness achieve the goals of working competitive, integrated employment and again, bring folks into the workforce and help address some of the workforce shortages. On a more general sense, I think the pandemic, workforce digital transformation, the pandemic has shown that digital services are more important than ever in workforce development, but our state's existing tools are falling behind. So the governor's budget proposed a one-time $10 million investment to modernize many of the digital tools that support workforce development initiatives across Minnesota, whether that's training, job matching, or other elements that can help Minnesotans find and sustain employment. Additionally, the enhancing state services for the blind, the governor's budget recommended $4 million in each biennium for the state services for the blind program. This will accomplish several things. One is state services for the blind being a largely federally funded program. It'll help us maximize the federal match and enable the program to keep pace with operational increases due to inflation. It'll also allow us to expand services to reach more individuals. As the state's population ages, we see that more senior citizens are experience vision loss, and we expect those populations to increase. This helps Minnesotans stay in the workforce, helps them live healthy, productive lives, and it's hopefully a tool that'll help many Minnesotans achieve their goals. And I will turn it over to my colleague, Devin Beaudry.
Mr. Beaudry.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Devin Beaudry, legislative liaison at DEED. So I'll have four items here that were probably not heard in this committee to address some of the questions from Wednesday, beginning with the Child Care Economic Development Grants. This is a program DEED has had for the last 4 or 5 years or so. These are grant funds to increase child care slots, so it could go to business startup and expansion, renovation of facilities to comply with license requirements. And so the governor is recommending $15 million over the biennium. Of that $15 million, $10 million would be for the grant program, and $5 million would go to the Minnesota Initiative Foundations to also be partners in this child care work. And they've been partners in the past, and we estimate that this will pull together provide up to 6,000 child care slots. I know Vice Chair Brand has had some statistics before about the deficiency statewide, and it's a huge number. Similar to that, we are proposing an Office of Child Care and Community Partnerships. Currently, we don't have a designated point person on child care deed, but if there's any constant across all the conversations we have, whether it's workforce partners or economic development partners, child care always comes up. So having that front door, that person that's focused on coordination of child care programs and planning and technical assistance with external stakeholders, as well as with DHS, with the Children's Cabinet, is very important. Next, this was hinted to on Wednesday. It's the Energy Transition Grant Program. There are several communities across the state with coal power plants that are retiring. And those plants in some communities make up a huge amount of the tax base, of the jobs. So these would be planning dollars to help diversify the economy, do land use studies, and really figure out how to make up that gap in tax revenue that will be missing. And lastly, this is an item that came out of the revised budget, the Destination Medical Center modifications. This is just to clarify that Destination Medical Center could claim transit aid, as particular as it relates to buses, bus charging stations, and some other pieces. And there are some fiscal implications, which is why it's, I believe, $3 million each year of the biennium. And it would also clarify that any local match to claim transit aid would carry over into the next year and be counted as well. And I believe that is all we have.
Discussion. Representative Spencer Mira.
I have a question about the Office of Child Care and Community Partnerships. Just wondering why this office will be at DEED rather than the new Department for Children and Families that I know we've heard a lot about this session.
Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sensenmura, I think it's possible that it could be shifted over if that's something that does inevitably become real and created. I don't know a whole lot about the technicalities of that, but I think I've seen that with that new department, there would be some new positions and some repurposed, and I don't know, that maybe this becomes part of that discussion. But at the moment, at DEED, that child care work is just like a part of someone's portfolio, and it really should be amplified in someone's whole position.
Representative Samira. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Spencer Merritt, I think, brought up a good question, is it, and I'm just kind of wondering along, kind of piggybacking off of that, is there duplication? Because, you know, we've heard a lot. I serve on Children and Families, and I believe, trying to remember what all committees we serve on together, but it's kind of starting to blur together. We've heard a lot in Children and Families about child care and the need for it. And is it really a DEED program to work with employers that are providing child care, or just kind of how If maybe we could explain a little bit more on that, please.
Mr. Paltry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson. So I think the intent would be to have the director of this office run the child care grant program that we have, also work with the MIFs, and then view the child care topic from the economic development standpoint. We do hear that some businesses want to provide their own child care, so providing TA, having that expertise, it would not really cross into sort of like the licensing and CCAP and all of that stuff. So purely an economic development focus here.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
Lead Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and testifiers, thank you for being here today. Again, appreciate the questions earlier about the offices and creating new stuff. And again, new FTEs are really adding up fast in the governor's proposals for all agencies, not just this one. But I know that that's a concern to a lot of folks. My question might be maybe to Mr. Rowe about the Destination Medical Medication Centers or but just I know that was a very complex deal they put together. I think it was on the very I came in on the very tail end of when that was just kind of getting approved and moving forward. Is this increasing dollars, another $3 million per year for a while here? Is it just this biennium? I see it's expediting and increasing the maximum annual payments. I want to make sure that we're not slicing something through our committee here without kind of that full-blown understanding because it was a complex deal. So I just wanted to make sure that that gets approached on this committee.
Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, and not a local aid guy, so I don't also appreciate the complexity of it. My understanding is that it would be $3 million each year for the next 10 years.
Leif Baker.
So, Mr. Chair, and is this new money now on top of what was already agreed to? So this is adding to the state's commitment to the Destination Medical Center? So I want to know that we're increasing that, and are there in your knowledge, are there other areas in the state government that we are increasing that previous agreement on top of the funds that had been promised before?
Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, this is an increase, but I don't know how that interplays with other components.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? Representative, Vice Chair Brain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a lot of things in here that are really good. I wish we would have had more time to digest this stuff before we take the final vote on the bill. I think it's kind of unusual that this close to final meeting of a committee that we would have this type of a presentation. I just wanted to point that out. I have a couple of questions for you. The first one is about the Office of New Americans. Do we have any data from maybe the demographic or the demographer, the state demographer or something like that? What are we looking at in terms of influx of people that are new Americans to Minnesota for the workforce? Do we have any data that shows how much we can expect to kind of relieve the workforce challenges that we obviously have across the country, but of course in our state as well?
Commissioner Majors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. There is data available through the demographer's office, and I'll be glad to obtain that and provide it to the committee.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Second question I have, when we're looking at the Youth Build Program and the support of that, Youth Workforce Development, on that next slide, we're looking at doubling the existing funds to $20 million. Fantastic. I guess my question is this program that we're focusing towards our young Minnesotans, are we looking at that in terms of filling gaps? Or are we kind of also providing some incentive or some support to create more entrepreneurs here in Minnesota?
Commissioner Majors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I think that's an interesting question. I mean, I think we are probably at the lowest point in terms of our having a workforce in the state's history. And demographers probably spoken to that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to prepare a workforce to help move us forward. I think that there have been there are certainly, obviously, there's gaps now, right? There's 200,000 job vacancies in the state. And I think in the idea for the why we're doubling down is because we need to meet the moment, not only now, but in the future as well. Mm-hmm. So creating a pipeline of workers, creating a career path and putting them in through via career pathways is very key at this moment. It's critical to our economy as a state. So I guess you could say, yeah, it's meeting a gap, but I think it's also preparing to meet future needs while moving forward.
What's your brand?
Just to follow up to that one, so maybe not so entrepreneurship focused, but maybe more creating that pipeline, laying that pipeline for the gaps.
So we sorry.
Commissioner Majors.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative. No, there certainly is entrepreneurial training that does go on in these programs as well. So okay. If that's a component, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Bless your brain.
Another question I had was the individual placement and supports program. Can you tell me, you know, we're talking about folks with serious mental illnesses, and I know some of them can be on the violent side. Is this going to be focused on primarily folks that have a history of nonviolence, or are we also going to support folks with violence in their background as well?
Commissioner Rowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brand, my understanding of the program is, so we work through a series of nonprofit and community partners around the state. I think different partners have different focuses, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the funding increase, I think the objective is that we would be able to serve more people, period. Obviously, mental illness is deeply complex, and every person's situation is unique. And I think the purpose of that program is really to provide those kind of tailored and individualized services,
sure,
so that each individual can have the maximum success in the workforce.
Okay,
Vice Chair Brian.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that one, you know, in my community in particular, we deal with both violent and nonviolent offenders at the Regional Treatment Center in St. Peter. So that's why I'm asking that question, I guess, because, you know, there is an element to rehabilitation in there, and I don't want to disallow somebody who has a history but has rehabilitated from possibly, you know, being part of that program. The last question I have, and this is the child care, the matching, or the grants, rather, for $10 million. There's a $10 million for Greater Minnesota Child Care Providers and that sort of thing, and then a $5 million, I believe, for the Minnesota Initiative Foundations. Both of those pieces of legislation are very close to the piece of legislation that I actually carried in and this year. So as far as the $10 million that let's separate the $15 million into two. There's $5 million for MIFs and then $10 million for child care opportunity. The number is staggering, 42,000 empty slots in Minnesota. That's 42,000 families who are having to juggle their careers with growing a family. And I think that speaks to the challenges we have over the last 30 years of actually declining births in Minnesota and the challenges there within. The $10 million that we are talking about, would that be matching funds for counties and cities? So that way, realistically, we would have $20 million to play within Greater Minnesota? Or is it just a one-for-one grant?
Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe there is a matching requirement that comes with the program, and I don't have our latest figures, but there are past years. So, for example, in fiscal year 2020, we had about 720,000 or so invested in the program, mm-hmm, which resulted in about $7 million in match. So it does bring a lot of leverage.
Super. That's the end of my questions. Thank you very much.
Representative Majors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner Majors. Playing musical chairs. This goes back to a line of questioning that Vice Chair Brand had in regards to the New Americans Center. And the question I have is, how is that, I had a couple of questions, but how is that working in coordination with or in tandem with our ethnic councils?
Mr. Majors.
Thank you, Chair Zong, Representative. Actually, as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, that we actually work with the entire enterprise. This office works with the enterprise, and actually our ethnic councils are part of those meetings that we have on a quarterly basis. In addition, that the current Assistant Commissioner for Immigrant and Refugee Affairs meets with those ethnic councils on a monthly basis, just to check in and make sure that there's we're all on the same going down the same path in terms of doing the work. Just kind of a reminder for the group, for the committee, is that, you know, the focus for this office will be looking specifically at workforce and economic development for immigrant and refugee affairs, and also making sure that coordinating the efforts of the enterprise, as well as kind of tracking national legislation at the same time, just to ensure that the state is keeping up with what is happening in Congress.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. And did I hear you right? We have a 200,000 gap in workforce? Did I hear that number right? That's what I wrote down. I don't know.
Commissioner Majors.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, it's roughly about 200,000 job vacancies in the state of Minnesota.
Okay.
Overall. And it's
okay.
Been that way for about a year or so.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question, I think this goes back to a question that Vice Chair Brand asked as well. Do we have any projections of with the work that's going to happen in the Center for New Americas? Do we have any projections of how that work can help fill the gap that we have?
Mr. Majors.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. That is what we're working on, which is that's what all these initiatives are looking at communities that have been overlooked in the process of hiring, and really reaching out, doing outreach, addressing barriers, and then also taking care of business and putting and training them as well, and making sure that they're prepared to meet the moment. We can look at unemployment, folks who are under the unemployment. We do have those numbers, and we can provide that to you. Certainly, we can send them to the committee. Absolutely. I just don't have them off the top of my head. Yeah.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question, but I just want to kudo the governor's office indeed for including the increase for the individual placement support for people who have mental illness. The worst thing you can do to somebody who has mental illness is tell them to be idle and sit somewhere and do nothing. So I know that in my district, Avivo does great work of working with people who have mental illness and placing them in the workplace. So I really appreciate this increase, because this makes a lot of, you know, difference for so many people across the state. Thank you.
Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you to Deed for coming forward and answering a lot of questions. I sort of want to echo Representative Brand and sort of just the concern and frustration. This came to us way late. I don't know why it did, and maybe somebody can ask us. I think we got your final bill, your requests here late in March, after the first or second deadline. Is there an explanation why we got this information so late?
Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Lead Baker, I think it was just a lot of bills coming through the advisor's office and being busy this year. I think all of the governor's bills were a bit behind this year.
Mr. Chair, yes, they were. And again, it's harder for us to do this. I know that we've got hard deadlines and things were moving very, very fast this year. So again, I do appreciate, I think actually some of the ideas that you presented were not real bad. I kind of like the drive for five when I see the areas of your focus. I think that's good. During this whole year, we've been focused on trying to help a lot of nonprofits get people that really need help to work and help them get the job skills. It would have been nice to have this focus early on. It would have been nice to kind of see where the pathways were that Deed was focused on, and so we could sort of coordinate that with those nonprofits to kind of help them sort of land this pipeline into sort of the same overview that you're thinking. What I have learned a lot about state government over the last several years is that we have a bunch of silos, and as we continue to open offices of something, it creates what appears to be better collaboration and more communication, but it's also more meetings and it's more time that folks like you have to keep attending. And when I've seen it with my work with the ORAC committee and DHS, it just really becomes this you know, it takes 3 weeks to make a meeting happen because everybody is so tied up in meetings. I just want to say that there's some good things here. I think our bill, as we kind of get ready to start wrapping it up, has got some good things here. It would have been very helpful for us to kind of see what Deed had coming in earlier than this. I think that we've got 200,000 people, we have 200,000 job openings that we can't fill, and we don't have enough people for that. We've got to start focusing on that, because I think what we were doing this year was very, very, very focused on helping those most in need to get job skills. We really honed in on that. We didn't even get to really talk about how do we fix and help the nursing home stuff. How do we really kind of do some of the larger numbers with helping employers find a way to do this easier in Minnesota, not harder. So, again, I appreciate getting this information. It does check off a lot of my questions that I have that we did not hear before. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate, the presentation today. Thank you.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you as well. I was just kind of circling back to the child care stuff because I'm also on the Children and Families Committee. And just kind of, again, looking through the children and families budget, because I do think that there's a lot of intersection, kind of like how Representative Sincere-Muro was highlighting. Just have you talked to anybody at DHS about, because there's some governor's proposals from DHS, too, that are trying to address the child care workforce.
Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have not been in that conversation, but I know currently the person who leads our child care work now does communicate with them, but I'd have to get back to you on what more specifically was discussed as far as coordinating the proposals here.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Yeah, that's fine. I know, like, the kind of like how Representative Sincere-Muro said about the new departments and everything's could be kind of in flux. And I appreciate hearing that you're coordinating. It's really frustrating because I also work for the state to be like doing really good work in one place and then feeling siloed because someone else is doing great work other places and you could be doing better work when you're working together. So just really encourage continuing those conversations and happy to talk offline too.
Chair Song.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. And I want to thank our staff, both partisan and nonpartisan, for all your work. We have had really rough 3 years, and our workforce was hit hard. So sitting in this space and thinking about how can we creatively and innovatively figure out this issue, how can we put more people back to work, how can we make sure that people who are underemployed can be gainfully employed, this was a great conversation, and I applaud you, Chair, for your dedication to make sure that equity was the center of all of this conversation. We have heard from many great people doing wonderful work around the state. Some of my highlights in this committee was when we heard from young people, specifically one young woman from Pillsbury United who want to go to Howard University. That will stay with me forever and wants to become a psychologist and come back to her community and serve her community. So this was great experience. It was also, a lot of burden in our shoulders to make sure that, we don't just hear bills, but we actually take action on those bills. And I applaud you, Chair, for the sometimes tough decisions that you have to make. I know that, we had a lot of, a significant amount of money, but we also had a great need for many, worthy projects that came through here. I will say this is a bill that, budget bill that I am extremely proud of, and I can stand on the House floor and defend it. So thank you for all your work, and I'm very thankful for our staff because without them we wouldn't have accomplished anything. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. Vice Chair Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to also echo some of the same things that Chair Hassan said. I am really proud of the legislation. I'm really proud of the fact that we allowed those doors to be open to so many diverse opinions and so many diverse ideas and opportunities for the workforce here in Minnesota. 200,000 open job vacancies is a daunting amount that we need to work on. Some of that, unfortunately, will probably never get filled just because we just don't have the workforce. And I think that that's a sentiment that I think is best served by saying I think we really ought to really force our federal partners to reevaluate our immigration reform policies in this country to allow more folks the opportunity to come to this the state and across this country to help fill these jobs, to provide better opportunity and a more stable world for themselves and their families. You know, and I think that that's been the story of America for over 200 years. And so, you know, I think it's really imperative that we work with our federal partners, both the House, the Senate, even with our president, to get something done in a bipartisan fashion, because that's where we are right now in the at the federal level. To go back to the opportunity here in Minnesota, I really do think that providing more child care opportunities equals more opportunities for people to not take 5 or 10 years off from their career path, to dive into their careers, to do things right. And I think that there are other opportunities that we're talking about here at the legislature to help our families in times of need, to take time away from the workforce, but not a full hard stop, quit their job. Just take time to take care of their family members that are dying, the family members that are sick, and their loved ones that really need that support when they need it. Back home in my district, I've got a lot of friends who have had a lot of serious things happen to family members, and they've had to decide, do I work or do I drop everything and take care of my loved one? And I'll tell you, 10 times out of 10, it's drop everything. And I don't know that that works for our workforce needs in Minnesota either. So I'm really looking forward to some opportunities to massage a final product that looks well for our state, that meets the need of our state. One constituent reached out to me not too long ago and said that they have paid family leave through the federal act for 3 months. But in the Mankato area, they will not take anybody that's less than infants less than 4 months. So what do we do for that 1 month in between? We've got to figure that out, and I think that that's something that our legislature really needs to get involved with as well. So hopefully through children and families and all the other silos we have, and with our partners in the governor's office and our partners in the Senate, we can address that issue. Because, yes, we do want new families to both come here to Minnesota but also to flourish in Minnesota, but we really can't do that when we've got artificial things that are kind of setting up maybe not success here for our young families. And the last thing I just wanted to say is thank you very much, Lead Baker, but also Chair Zhang, for being so collaborative in the final product, for allowing us to have opportunity to really do what I think is really going to be impactful for the state of Minnesota. I'm really looking forward to working with our partners both in the Senate and at the governor's office to craft our final product, the budget that we will all pass off eventually, between now and the end of May, or the middle of May. So thank you very much, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Vice Chair, Lead Baker, and then we're going to vote. Lead Baker.
Oh, okay. So this is wrap-up time, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Okay. Again, I want to echo what a lot has been said. I think, again, you know, we're not going to call a roll call today. It's a thing that we'd like to, again, support. I think we want to work on this going forward. There's still work to do on this. I'm committed to working on something that you allowed to pass through today, which I appreciate. I think the overall theme, I guess, this year when I was landed and was proud to be asked to be the lead on this committee was to really jump into some workforce stuff. We did a lot of what we've been doing here for years, and that's help our nonprofits, help our folks that need some extra hand-holding and to get up and so that they can succeed and be thriving in the state of Minnesota, to lose less Minnesotans outside. I was really hoping that we would do more of significant things on a higher level to help employers feel like we're more on their side. Right now, our theme around here has been this: the business mandates are heavy on business minds right now. The Earn Sick and Safe time is not easy for some to handle. The House File 2 that we haven't really vetted out much yet through, there's more committee stops, but that is a bill that needs so much work, and people have a lot of heartburn, and there's a lot of money sitting aside right now for that bill that we just heard, you know, for a very short time in a very front end of the session this year. Again, I worry about just the expansion of jobs in the governor's proposals for all departments. There's like 4,500 jobs that they want to create throughout these offices. Again, the new payroll tax coming for the House File 2 is a proposal of 400-plus jobs. Those things add up, and it's hard to stop that once government starts growing. It's really hard, and when that gets retracted at some point, we are going to really face some tough decisions at some point in the state of Minnesota when we don't literally have the money like we have this year. I don't think we'll ever see this ever again. So, Mr. Chair, again, you've been really great to work with. You have listened. You have been always open to our phone calls. We've had good discussions. Again, Mr. Reese has been a great committee administrator. Thank you very much for all your help, as well as all the staff members. Our staff here, Casey, thank you so much for that, and our team. But again, thank you for all your work this year, and we look forward to working on making Minnesota a more friendly workforce place to be for job creators and how we can continue to make Minnesota shine. So we look forward to continuing this work, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Baker, and I want to thank all of you for your engagement this year. I'm not going to say much because I think you all have said it already, especially with what Chair Hassan and Vice Chair Brand have mentioned. But I do want to thank the community from all across our state who were here to share their stories, to tell us what their needs are. And this bill that we crafted together, I hope, really reflects those needs, that this bill is a solution to address the shortages out there and to prepare our workforce future. And so I also want to say we could not have done this without our staff, our nonpartisan staff, Ms. Shalene and Ms. Ng, who were texting and calling late at night or over the weekend, working so hard to get this finished. And to our partisan staff, Sully, Dave Sullivan, for all your hard work. And also to Casey Peterson, I know that Lee Baker shared with me about your work over there, contributions to the committee too. And also want to thank our committee page, Zach, who's not here today, but Nick, who has been here to help out a lot, and to our CLA Bonzi Vu for making sure that my office is responsive and addresses, you know, concerns from community. And the person who is behind this whole committee who makes sure that we run it smoothly is Mr. Travis Reese. I appreciate you showing me the ropes as a first-year chair, not understanding how the system works. I really appreciate all that you have done. And so that said, before we vote, one bit of housekeeping. Our nonpartisan staff is authorized to make any technical changes necessary to reflect the will of the committee. And so I will renew my motion that House File 2233, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The bill is on its way. Any further comments? Seeing none, I believe that we will be coming back to take up the paid family leave bill. I don't know when, but we will make sure that you all are informed. I know that that was an issue that you, Lee Baker, had asked to hear, and
thank you.
We'll make sure that happens. That's it. Committee's adjourned.